Real existence is only this exact moment. Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 318. Zen Buddhism, part 18. In which I will be reading from Master Eihei Dogen's Shobogenzo, specifically the chapter called Uji, here translated as Existence Time. It's one of my favorites. As a general rule, I'm reading things aloud here that I have not read before, but Shobogenzo I have read twice. And absolutely love Shobogenzo, and it's really what got me started. When I came to India from California, I had two Buddhist books, you might say. One was Lady of the Lotus Born, and one was Dogen's Shobogenzo Volume 1. I had given most everything away before I left California, but I brought those two with me and read Lady of the Lotus Born before I gave it away to some Tibetan Buddhists in Nepal, and was rereading this, and then I gave it away to a yoga instructor from New Caledonia. And then eventually I rebought both of those, I think, and started my collection. So anyway, so I have read Shobogenzo before. Uji is one of my top two favorite of Dogen's lectures, and Dogen is my favorite. So I'm really looking forward to this reading. But before we get started, Editor Edward, could you bring back the clock? Yeah, I noticed something a little different by the 9 there. Normally, by the 9 is a little Dharma wheel, and when the episode number ends in 9, we read Tipitaka. But it changed, so I guess we can expect something different for the next episode. We'll talk more about that at the end. All right. Just a little teaser there. Okay. Without any further ado, I'm going to go ahead and get into this. And I hope that you enjoy this half as much as I do. Here we go. Uji, existence time. U means existence. And ji means time. So uji means existence time. Or existence time with a hyphen. In this chapter, Master Dogen teaches us the meaning of time in Buddhism. As Master Dogen explains in other chapters, Buddhism is realism. He doesn't use those exact words, but therefore the view of time in Buddhism is always very realistic. Specifically, time is always related with existence, and existence is always related with momentary time. So in reality, the past and the future are non-existent time. The present moment is the only existent time. The point at which we haven't even started reading Dogen yet. This is just Guru Nishijima and Chodo Cross giving us spoilers about what we're going to read. Why? I don't know. They put a lot of work into this they want to talk to, but I'll finish their paragraph. Okay, so in reality, yeah, we read that. Also, time is always related with action here and now. Action can only be realized in time, and time can only be realized in action. Thus, the view of time in Buddhism reminds us of existentialism in modern philosophy. Does it? It is very important to understand the Buddhist view of time in order to grasp the true meaning of Buddhism. Okay, so thank you to Guru Nishijima and or Chodo Cross for that introduction. Let's kind of take it with a grain of salt, you know, and connect more specifically with the words of Dogen as translated into English. All right. Are you ready? Now we're actually beginning. An eternal Buddha says, Sometimes standing on top of the highest peak, sometimes moving along the bottom of the deepest ocean, sometimes 3 heads and 8 arms, sometimes the 16-foot or 8-foot golden body, sometimes a staff or a whisk, sometimes an outdoor pillar or a stone lantern, sometimes the 3rd son of Chang or the 4th son of Li, sometimes the earth and space. That's the end of the quote, now Dogen speaking. In this word, sometimes, time is already just existence. The way he uses just means exactly that. Not like, it's just existence. Like, oh, it's just that's just a cat. Nothing to be scared of. No, he's not using just in that way. It's exactly existence. So I'll start again. In this word, sometimes, time is already just existence. And all existence is time. The 16-foot golden body is time itself. Because it is time, it has the resplendent brightness of time. We should learn it as the 12 hours of today. The 3 heads and 8 arms are time itself. Because they are time, they are completely the same as the 12 hours of today. We can never measure how long and distant or how short and pressing 12 hours is. At the same time, we call it 12 hours. So I'm skipping footnotes because I want to stay in the flow of the text, but I remember from last time, the time before I read this, that if you're confused about no one can ever tell you how long or how short 12 hours is. If you only have 12 hours to finish a big project you've been working on for a month and you're way behind, 12 hours is very short. If you have to wait a full 12 hours until the person you love is going to land in an airplane, 12 hours is very long, right? So 12 hours can be long and difficult to endure, or it can be short and pressing, depending. Okay, continuing. The leaving and coming of the directions and traces of time are clear, so people do not doubt it. They do not doubt it, but that does not mean they know it. The doubts which living beings, by our nature, have about everything and every fact that we do not know are not consistent. Therefore, our past history of doubt does not always exactly match our doubt now. We can say for the present, however, that doubt is nothing other than time. We put ourself in order and see the resulting state as the whole universe. Ever notice that? Each individual and each object in this whole universe should be glimpsed as individual moments of time. Object does not hinder object in the same way that moment of time does not hinder moment of time. For this reason, there are minds which are made up in the same moment of time. And there are moments of time in which the same mind is made up. Practice and realization of the truth are also like this. Putting the self in order, we see what it is. The truth that self is time is like this. We should learn and practice that because of this truth, the whole earth includes myriad phenomena and hundreds of things, and each phenomenon and each thing exists in the whole earth. I have to pause because I often go off on another channel about oneness and the illusion of separate self and things like that. So he's kind of alluding to something that I'm going to go ahead and interpret, and I'm not saying what he's saying. I'm saying what I'm saying. But nonetheless, I'm going to say it. self is time. And later he's going to say, the only existence is this exact moment. The present moment is existence. Time is self. Self as memory. I remember looking at myself in the mirror. I remember I can do this, but I can't make your hand do that unless I have some kind of powerful telekinesis or something. And so I know from experience, from memory, for practical purposes going forward, I should maintain an awareness of separate self. However, when you're allowed to reach those deep states of meditation, it's not an illusion. It's an illusion you break out of. It's a persistent illusion. It's a persistent habit of separate self that you can break free from in deep meditation and get into this moment, which has many parts. The now dance, which reigns through all, to quote my dad. Okay, that's enough. Enough sidebar. Let's get back to the text, Edward. We should learn in practice that because of this truth, the whole earth includes myriad phenomena and hundreds of things. And each phenomenon and each thing exists in the whole earth. Such to-ing and fro-ing is a first step on the way of practice. When we arrive in the field of the ineffable, there is just one concrete thing and one concrete phenomenon, here and now, beyond understanding of phenomena and non-understanding of phenomena, and beyond understanding of things and non-understanding of things. Because real existence is only this exact moment. All moments of existence time are the whole of time, and all existent things and all existent phenomena are time. The whole of existence, the whole universe, exists in individual moments of time. Let us pause to reflect whether or not any of the whole of existence or any of the whole universe has leaked away from the present moment of time. Yet, in the time of the common man who does not learn the Buddha Dharma, there are views and opinions. When he hears the words existence time, he thinks, sometimes I became an angry demon with 3 heads and 8 arms, and sometimes I became a 16-foot or 8-foot golden body of Buddha. For example, it was like crossing a river or crossing a mountain. The mountain and the river may still exist, but now that I have crossed them and am living in a jeweled palace with crimson towers, the mountain and the river are as distant from me as heaven is from earth. End quote. But true reasoning is not limited to this one line of thought. That is to say, when I was climbing a mountain or crossing a river, I was there in that time. There must have been a time in me. And I actually exist now, so time could not have departed. I'm pretty sure the sidebar that I gave about separate self and all of that is not necessarily related to any of the points that Dogen is making. So I'll just put that out there as a qualifier. If time does not have the form of leaving and coming, the time of climbing a mountain is the present as existence time. If time does not retain the form of leaving and coming, I have this present moment of existence time, which is just existence time itself. How could that time of climbing the mountain and crossing the river fail to swallow and fail to vomit this time now in the jeweled palace with the crimson towers? The 3 heads and the 8 arms were time yesterday, The 16-foot or 8-foot golden body is time today. Even so, this Buddhist principle of yesterday and today is just about moments in which we go directly into the mountains and look out across 1,000 or 10,000 peaks. It is not about what has passed. The 3 heads and 8 arms pass instantly as my existence time. Though they seem to be in the distance, they are moments of the present. The 16-foot or 8-foot golden body also passes instantly as my existence time. Though it seems to be yonder, it is moments of the present. This being so, pine trees are time, and bamboos are time. We should not understand only that time flies. We should not learn that flying is the only ability of time. If we just left time to fly away, some gaps in it might appear. Those who fail to experience and to hear the truth of existence time do so because they understand time only as having passed. To grasp the pivot and express it, all that exists throughout the whole universe is lined up in a series and at the same time is individual moments of time. Because time is existence time, it is my existence time. Existence time has the virtue of passing in a series of moments. That is to say, from today it passes through a series of moments to tomorrow. From tomorrow it passes through a series of moments to yesterday. From yesterday it passes through a series of moments to today. From today it passes through a series of moments to today. And from tomorrow it passes through a series of moments to tomorrow. Because passage through separate moments is a virtue of time, moments of the past and present are neither piled up on top of another nor lined up in a row. And for the same reason, Saigen, Master Saigen Gyoshu, died 740. Okay. Saigen is time. Obaku is time. There's footnotes for each of the people he's mentioning, but I'll just keep reading to stay in the flow. Is time, Obaku is time, and Kosei and Sekito are time. Because subject and object already is time, practice and experience is moments of time. Going into the mud and going into the water, similarly, are time. The view of the common man today, and the causes and conditions of that view, are what the common man experiences, but are not the common man's reality. It is just that reality, for the present, has made a common man into its causes and conditions. Because he understands this, time and this existence to be other than reality, because he understands this time and this existence to be other than reality itself, he deems that the 16-foot golden body is beyond me. Attempts to evade the issue by thinking, I am never the 16-foot golden body, are also flashes of existence time. They are glimpses of it by a person who has yet to realize it in experience and to rely upon it. The existence time that also causes the horse and the sheep to be as they are arranged in the world today, is a rising and falling, which is something ineffable, abiding in its place in the Dharma. The rat is time, the tiger is time, living beings are time, and Buddhas are time. This time experiences the whole universe using 3 heads and 8 arms, and experiences the whole universe using the 16-foot golden body. To universally recognize the whole universe by using the whole universe is called to perfectly realize. Enactment of the 16-foot golden body by using the 16-foot golden body is realized as the establishment of mind, as training, as the state of Bodhi, and as Nirvana, that is, as existence itself, and as time itself. It is nothing other than the perfect realization of the whole of time as the whole of existence. There is nothing surplus at all. Because something surplus is just something surplus, even a moment of time half perfectly realized, existence time, is the perfect realization of half existence time. Even those phases in which we seem to be blundering heedlessly are also existence. If we leave it utterly up to existence, even though the moments before and after manifest heedless blundering, they abide in their place as existence time. Abiding in our place in the Dharma, in the state of vigorous activity, is just existence time. We should not disturb it by interpreting it as being without, and we should not enforceably call it existence. In regard to time, we strive to comprehend only how relentlessly it is passing. We do not understand it intellectually and what is yet to come, even though intellectual understanding is time. No circumstances are ever influenced by it. Human skin bags recognize time as leaving and coming. None has penetrated it as existence time abiding in its place. How much less could they experience time having passed through the gate? Even among those who are conscious of abiding in their place, who can express the state of having already attained the ineffable? Even among those who have been asserting for a long time that they are like this, there is none who is not still groping for the manifestation before them of the real features. If we leave even Bodhi and Nirvana as they are in the existence time of the common man, even Bodhi and Nirvana are, though merely a form which leaves and comes, existence time. In short, without any cessation of restrictions and hindrances, existence time is realized. Celestial kings and celestial throngs, now appearing to the right and appearing to the left, are the existence time in which we are now exerting ourselves. Elsewhere, beings of existence time of land and sea are also realized, through our own exertion now. The many kinds of beings and the many individual beings which live as existence time in darkness and in brightness are all the realization of our own effort and the momentary continuance of effort. We should learn and practice that without the momentary continuance of our own effort in the present, not a single dharma, nor a single thing, could ever be realized, or could ever continue from one moment to the next. We should never learn that passage from one moment to the next is like the movement east and west of the wind and rain. The whole universe is neither beyond moving and changing, nor beyond progressing and regressing. It is passage from one moment to the next. An example of the momentary passing of time is spring. Spring has innumerable different aspects, which we call a passage of time. We should learn in practice that the momentary passing of time continues without there being any external thing. The momentary passing of spring, for example, inevitably passes moment by moment through spring itself. Happy spring equinox, by the way. 2 days late. One and a half days late. It is not that the momentary passing of time is spring. Rather, because spring is the momentary passing of time, passing time has already realized the truth in the here and now of springtime. We should research this in detail, returning to it and leaving it again and again. If we think, in discussing the momentary passing of time, that circumstances are only individual things on the outside, while something can pass from moment to moment, moves east through hundreds of thousands of worlds, and through hundreds of thousands of kalpas, then we are not devoting ourselves solely to Buddhist learning in practice. Great Master Yakusan Kodo, the story goes, at the suggestion of Great Master Musai, visits Zen Master Kosei Daijaku. He asks, quote, I have more or less clarified the import of the three vehicles and the 12 divisions of the teaching. But just what is the ancestral master's intent in coming from the West? End quote. Referring to Bodhidharma coming from India to China. Thus questioned, Zen Master Daijaku says, quote, sometimes I make him lift an eyebrow or wink an eye, and sometimes I do not make him lift an eyebrow or wink an eye. Sometimes to make him lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is right, and sometimes to make him lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is not right. End quote. Hearing this, Yaku-san realizes a great realization and says to Daijaku, quote, in Sekito's order, I have been like a mosquito that climbed onto an iron ox. End quote. What Daijaku says is not the same as what others can say. His eyebrows and eyes may be the mountains and the seas, because the mountains and the seas are his eyebrows and eyes. In his making himself lift an eyebrow, he may be looking at the mountains, and in his making himself wink, he may be presiding over the seas. Being right has become familiar to him, and he has been led by the teaching. Neither is not being right the same as not making himself act. Nor is not making himself act the same as not being right. All these situations are existence time. The mountains are time, and the seas are time. Without time, the mountains and the seas could not exist. We should not deny that time exists in the mountains and the seas here and now. If time decays, the mountains and seas decay. If time is not subject to decay, the mountains and the seas are not subject to decay. In accordance with this truth, the bright star appears, the Tathagata appears, the eye appears, and picking up a flower appears. This is just time. Without time, it would not be like this. Picking up a flower, referring to the story of when Lord Buddha picked up a flower and Mahakasyapa, the disciple, understood the meaning that nobody else understood, and thus was the beginning of the line of what we now call Zen. It's the story of that. Zen Master Kisho of the Shokan region is a Dharma descendant of Rinzai and the rightful successor of Shuzan. On one occasion, he preaches to the assembly. Sometimes the will is present, but the words are absent. Sometimes the words are present, but the will is absent. Sometimes the will and the words are both present. Sometimes the will and the words are both absent. Back to Dogen talking. The will and the words are both existence time. Practice, presence and absence are both existence time. The moment of presence has not finished, but the moment of absence has come. The will is the donkey and the words are the horse. Horses have been made into words and donkeys have been made into will. Presence is not relating to having come, and absence is not relating to not having come. Existence time is like this. Presence is restricted by presence itself. It is not restricted by absence. Absence is restricted by absence itself. It is not restricted by presence. The will hinders the will and meets the will. Words hinder words and meet words. Restriction hinders restriction and meets restriction. Restriction restricts restriction. This is time. Restriction is utilized by objective dharmas. But restriction that restricts objective dharmas has never occurred. I meet with a human being. A human being meets with a human being. I meet with myself. And manifestation meets with manifestation. Without time, these facts could not be like this. Furthermore, the will is the time of the realized universe. The words are the time of the pivot, which is the ascendant state. Presence is the time of laying bare the substance. And absence is the time of sticking to this and parting from this. We should draw distinctions. We should enact existence time like this. Though venerable patriarchs hitherto have each spoken as they have, how could there be nothing further to say? I would like to say, the half-presence of will and words is existence time. The half-absence of will and words is existence time. There should be research in experimenting like this. Making oneself lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is half existence time. Making oneself lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is mixed up existence time. Not making oneself lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is half existence time. Not making oneself lift an eyebrow or wink an eye is mixed up existence time. When we experience coming and experience leaving, when we experience presence and experience absence like this, that is existence time. Shobogenzo Uji, written at Kosho Horinji Temple on the first day of winter in the first year of Ninji, which is to say 1240. It was the first day of the 10th lunar month of 1240. Okay. Copied during the summer retreat in the first year of Kangen in 1243 Edo. I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I enjoy it. And I've read that several times. And as you noticed, I didn't need to check the footnotes at times because I already remember them. If you look in the description of the YouTube video, for those who are on the audio only, find this video on YouTube. Look in the description. You can find this translation in PDF for free. And then you can look at the table of contents. Assuming it's the same as this, it's around page 90-something, 91. And you can check out all the footnotes. There were many. There might have been more footnotes than there was text. See why I like to skip it, because I don't want to spend the entire time. When it's something beautiful and poetic like that, I don't want to spend the entire time reading footnotes. But they do shed light. The 16-foot golden body, you know, these things are all specific references that it explains in the footnotes. So you can download that PDF and flip to that page and check out all the footnotes if you want to. Goose chase footnotes, as my dad used to call it. I just love that. And again, take my, thoughts that I blurted out in the middle about existence and separate existence with a grain of salt, which kind of ties in nicely, I think, based on what little I know thus far, to the change. Let's bring up the clock. Okay, so see by the 9, it's something a little different. Longtime viewers, I haven't been doing it since we've gone horizontal. Let's bring down the clock and put up the 6 categories, the 6 icons. So the Tipitaka, when we read the Tipitaka, that's pre-sectarian early Buddhism, which I denote with the Dharma wheel. This picture of King Ashoka, that's how I represent Theravada, which is distinct from pre-sectarian early Buddhism. And I use Ashoka, in other words, right around the third council and forward. So long, at, a few hundred years after Lord Buddha has passed away, King Ashoka is alive and has converted to Buddhism and is spreading it across India. And, Buddhism has become a very established religion at that time. And then Mahayana develops later on. I think the mysterious appearance of the Lotus Sutra is a good moment to point to around the first century Common Era. That's the statue of, I think that's actually Lord Buddha because he's got the bowl, although it might be Amitabha. It doesn't matter too much. The point is it's more of a Mahayana thing to see statues like that. So I used those other two icons to represent pre-Mahayana and the statue to represent Mahayana. And then this, the symbol of the eight auspicious symbols, let's put those on the screen, combined into one symbol is the very colorful symbol there that I used to represent Tibetan Vajrayana. And then, of course, there's Shingon, which is Japanese Vajrayana, and then Zen. That's what we did today, was Zen. That's Dogen. That's a Dogen wearing the black robe. So what we don't have on the, what we didn't have on the clock before was what we now have up there by the nine, which is the symbol that I use for Mahayana. And the reason for that is because I got inspired, and while I'm awkwardly trying to find the particular book behind me, Editor Edward, would you please play the a little bit of the YouTube video that inspired me to add something to the wheel?
The year is 150 CE. Buddhism is fracturing into 18 schools, each building elaborate philosophical systems, each claiming to represent the Buddha's original teaching. Hindu philosophers are asking devastating questions. Buddhist scholars are losing ground in the great debate halls of India. Buddhism is under pressure. In ancient India, religions lived or died by debate, in royal courts and public halls. The stakes could be brutal. The losing philosopher's school expelled from patronage, funding cut, students forbidden. If your philosophy couldn't withstand scrutiny, your religion lost credibility. Buddhism was hemorrhaging ground. The Dharma was becoming philosophical quicksand. Buddhist schools were arguing with each other, some declaring atoms as ultimate reality, others declaring consciousness as the foundation, all claiming to represent the Buddha's original insight. Buddhism was about 600 years old. It risked either ossifying into rigid dogmatism, becoming another metaphysical system indistinguishable from what it opposed, or dissolving into empty nihilism that meant nothing. Every school was trying to give Buddhism a foundation, something solid to defend. And then a man arrives who refuses to defend anything. What we actually know about Nagarjuna could fit on a single page. Probably lived between 150 and 250 CE, possibly associated with Nalanda University in northern India, though the details are debated. But his work certainly spread through the same university world. Author of the Mula Madhyama Kakarika, the fundamental verses on the middle way, 27 chapters, roughly 450 verses. This text would transform Buddhism.
Now, normally, just to, reveal a little bit about my process, it's not saying it should have anything to do with anybody else's process, it's just my process. Because I learned about Buddhism through word of mouth from other people in Southern California for the early part of my life, and then held my connection to it, very personally, long before I even cracked open one single book and read any single line of anything that could be called scripture or Buddhist teachings of ancient times or of old. Now I'm, you know, kind of on another extreme where I'm only reading from books, and I'm really avoiding hearing what people in present time have to say about present interpretations of things. I'm aware of and I appreciate all those things. The Buddhism that developed in Vietnam as like an anti-war active Buddhism, and Thich Nhat Hanh and all of that stuff. Like I appreciate it. It's just not where I'm focused right now, because I want to establish the foundation of pre-sectarian early Buddhism, and then start to build the first layers of Mahayana within myself before I skip ahead in my mind. That's skipping ahead. And again, this is my interpretation. It doesn't have to be your interpretation. I'm not a teacher advising you how to go through your process. I'm a fellow student sharing my process that may be different from yours, and should be, I think, different from yours. So, but I happened to click on that video because I was intrigued, because I had learned a little bit about Nagarjuna when I was first putting together the tree of time of the different forms of Buddhism, and in order to sort the books behind me and decide what goes in which century, and you know how everything is connected, and I was pretty fascinated by Nagarjuna and Madhyamaka, and I got I think two or three books on Madhyamaka, and so what I didn't realize until I watched that video and saw that, okay, so he wrote that document in response to all the controversy in order, and that was his big famous work where, I mean, just speaking from ignorance largely, a lot of things that people associate with the teachings of Buddha are actually the teachings of Nagarjuna. So when someone goes on about, oh, it's not self, and it's not self, and it's to say that it's self, that's kind of where I was saying, you know, ignore everything I'm saying about self and not self, because of Nagarjuna, actually, is he's saying, no, it's wrong to say that, and it's wrong to say that, and it's wrong to say that, and it's wrong to say that, but then not coming out and saying what it's right to say. You know, things like that, kind of like a little bit of the, when it gets a little spacey, like you know, the typical person on LSD saying, well, the Buddha says that it's not this and not that. They're probably quoting Nagarjuna, not the Buddha. So now that we've been reading for 4 years, we've been reading these maroon books behind me. Whenever there's a Dharma wheel now, that's so we're still mostly reading pre-sectarian early Buddhism. Now that I feel like I have a little bit of a connection, not saying I have a total understanding, but I have a lot more to read yet. But a connection with the person of Lord Buddha, who he was, and the kinds of things he would say and the way he would speak. Now that that's, I feel like he's a person I know. Now I feel like I'm ready to bring in Nagarjuna. Nagarjuna came around 600 years after Lord Buddha and clarified the teachings in a way within the context of Mahayana, that all the developed, you know, Zen and Tantric Buddhism, Tibetan Vajrayana, you know, and Shingon, all kind of refer back to and take for granted as part of the layers of their teachings, the teachings of Nagarjuna. And so that name, that it's going to take me a while to be able to say out loud, the name of the book, the name of the text or whatever it is, Mula Madhyamaka Karika, that name. I bought this years ago and then saw that video yesterday and then sort of rolled my chair back, grabbed this out of the shelf. It's called The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way in English, and it's a translation of that document by Nagarjuna, with commentary. So as we did today, when I mentioned, oh, this paragraph was Gudo, Nishijima, and Chodo Cross, we get to know the characters the translators and the commentators, as well as the text that we're reading. On another program, we're reading Ibn Arabi, who was around, you know, 900 years ago, 800 years ago, but there's a lot of Michel Chodkiewicz, who was around 30 years ago, you know, from France, kind of like as an intermediary. So we kind of like, okay, this is Michel Chodkiewicz and this is Ibn Arabi. Michel Chodkiewicz says Ibn Arabi is saying that, but is he really saying that? And it's just kind of like holding that as like, maybe, you know, well, it's interesting that he thinks he's saying that, but I'm going to keep an open mind about maybe, you know, interpreting it for myself. So we'll do the same thing going into Madhyamaka. We'll take the commentary with a grain of salt, but we'll look with more attention on the actual translation of the words of Nagarjuna. So that's new. That'll be next time on Buddhist Books Podcast. Episode 319 will be the debut episode of Madhyamaka, which is part of Mahayana. It's Madhyamaka Mahayana, but it's, I think it's good to have some Mahayana on our schedule. I think it's time. Okay, so I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. If you haven't already, please feel free to like and subscribe. Blessings to you on your journey, and I will go ahead and do the usual closing that we do here. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.